Welcome back all to, I can't believe this, I think this may be the first or second podcast episode that I've done from home in 2025. It's been such a non-stop start to the year. This is only the third or fourth night I've actually spent at home so far this year, so it feels so nice just to be back for a little bit. I think I may head off again in 3 weeks' time because I've got a biking plan for a little road trip in my head with the Bonneville. I just need to see if that actually comes to reality. But at least for now, it feels great to be back home. I'm sure a lot of you will already know The Lost Biker Stories, our first book that we launched about stories from biking over the decades. I am currently working on getting content together for volume 2. So if you have any stories from yourself, your parents, family members, from all the way back to when motorcycling began, but this time not until the 1980s, but until the very end of the 1990s, I would love to receive any stories, any pictures that you have, and they'd all be hugely gratefully received. You can email stories@thelibertatia.com if you've got anything. Thank you so much in advance. And of course, thank you for the podcast, for everyone getting in touch, sharing your thoughts and opinions. Without you, it would be impossible to do this on a weekly basis, so I cannot thank you enough. The best place to share your thoughts, comment section below, and if you have a longer story, maybe some pictures, you can email hi@tuesdayatdobbs.com. We'll start off this week nice and chilled out, just simply, where do you keep your bikes? I like this little comparison here. Jerry, I'll start off with. Jerry, I think, if I remember correctly, based over in Canada. From Jerry, Freddie, did you know? Oh, this is interesting. Did you know that Indian is now the go-to manufacturer for the traditional big American cruiser? This was, of course, Harley's crown, but as Harley woes continue, Indian are taking full advantage. They represent great value for money. For example, my Springfield came standard with front and back crash bars. It also has the lower front fork section chromed and the switch control housings on the handlebars chromed. All of this is an optional extra on a Harley, adding dollars to the final price. Harley have been emailing me at least twice a week to attend a 2025 bike testing day or other social functions. But the problem is, I'm so thrilled and happy with my Springfield Thunderstroke that I have no inclination to move forward with Harley until something changes. Jerry, that garage you have there is absolutely phenomenal. It's nicer than a lot of professional mechanics garages here in the UK. It's certainly bigger. It's stunning. That's an incredible, incredible life goal if I could ever get something that's even close to that. And then over in the UK from Chris, look at this for a selection. Freddie, here are some pictures and details of my bikes and man cave. Pictured somewhere within these, you've got a Yamaha XVS 1300, a Yamaha Jog RR70cc, a Yamaha R3, there's a theme here, a Yamaha XJ600, and bucking the trend, Royal Enfield Himalayan 411. I love this bit from Chris. For every cat we get, I get a motorcycle. Number of cats in the household, 6. Number of motorcycles, 5. We will leave it at that. Chris, UK. I love it. Chris, thank you. On now. Oh, okay. I spent a ludicrous amount of time researching this. Sometimes there's a backstory or something about bikes or a story in general where I just get stupidly engrossed and spend an amount of time researching it that makes no sense at all. But this is from Ian. This is a British Army bike that spawned one of the rarest Harley Davidsons ever made. I wonder if just me saying that, if any of you will get that. I just give it 5 seconds. No chance, of course, that I would. I welcome the Armstrong MT500. So remember that in two parts, the Armstrong and also the MT500, because my American viewers may have a light bulb moment there. This is from Ian. Freddie, there's a long story behind these bikes. I had one, an Armstrong MT500. They're made in Bolton. Now that factory in Bolton is the CCM factory. These bikes do have their enthusiasts. definitely budget riding for Spanner enthusiasts. Ian, you just opened up a whole maze of stories here that just carried on and on from what I was reading. Let's begin with this, because this is quite a tale that snakes off in one direction then to the other. So the Armstrong MT500, this bike was built by Armstrong CCM. This is where the first bit of interest starts. So the last bit of this is interesting, as CCM, of course, we will all know, is a name very much still around. Small capacity, small production number motorcycles. They've built up a strong but definitely cult-like following. These still aren't mainstream motorcycles, but CCM's got a perfectly respected name, and they still make their bikes to this day in the UK. So CCM originally founded in 1971, and they've always really built these off-road bikes. In fact, I think in 1971, I think they bought the rights to a lot of the BSA off-road motorcycles, and that's how they really started. So they didn't have to start from scratch initially. They could start with a BSA as a base. 9 years after that, in 1980, Armstrong bought a majority share in CCM, and this is where you get the Armstrong CCM link. Armstrong CCM then bought the rights to use Italian brand SWM's Rotax 500 engine. Okay, good, so we've got two British brands here who have combined, and now they've bought the rights to use an Italian SWM Rotax 500 engine. Okay, stay with me here. Together, they then built the Armstrong MT500 from 1983 to 1987, so it had a 5-year production run. They built this bike primarily for the British Army. However, they were also bought in smaller numbers by the Canadian and Jordanian armed forces. Interestingly, these MT500s, apparently, they were used in the Falklands War. However, in 1987, Armstrong were bought out completely by CCM Motorcycles, and that is where production ended. That was the end of the MT500 from Armstrong CCM. Here's where the story then gets more complex. This is where it kicks in for the American viewers. There is also a Harley-Davidson MT500, and you may well wonder, what's the link there? Is there any link? Well, yes, it's a huge link. One of the rarest Harley-Davidsons ever made. Only 500 ever built, the Harley-Davidson MT500, produced, I think, all the way up to the year 2000. This is what happened. Harley-Davidson wanted to desperately try and boost sales. So what they did, they ended up pretty much buying all of the rights to be able to just simply make an Armstrong MT500 and just rebadge it as Harley-Davidson. In essence, they may have changed one or two bits and pieces, but that's what they did. And they wanted to build this off-road bike to try and get into the really lucrative American military contracts. They wanted to try and win military contracts so they could sell tens of thousands of these motorcycles to the American military. Just as Harley-Davidson had started building these bikes, they built just 500 of them. Demand for petrol-powered motorcycles, certainly for the US Army, pretty much disappeared because the American Army decided that they needed diesel-powered motorcycles. And then the story gets wrapped up with this. From a bike I mentioned a couple of months ago, this is where the diesel-powered Kawasaki KL650 of 1987 came out. And that is the diesel-powered motorcycle that the US Army used. And now we've gone full circle. That, in short, is how the start of the MT500 began and how it ended up dying out, with those American contracts needing diesel-powered engines and the Japanese Kawasaki KLR 650 coming to the savior of the American Army. There it is, a diesel-powered motorcycle, meaning there was never really any point for this Harley-Davidson, so only 500 built. But what can I find? Let's start with the Harley-Davidsons. First of all, you can imagine here, for one, it's Harley-Davidson, and secondly, such a microscopic amount of these were built. They're ridiculously rare, just so rare. If you manage to find one, you are going to be spending a lot of money on one. In fact, I couldn't find one currently for sale. What I did find is this, from iconicmotorbikeauctions.com. I found a model 2000, so the very last year of production to the best of my knowledge, with 7 miles on the clock. It's in mint as new condition, pretty much. You can see it's got those front panniers attached, overlapping the front wheel, and then you've got this weird, I think that may be for a gun on the back, actually, and then this funny looking storage on the back, Harley Davidson logo on the side. The price of this, $15,600, and that's an auction. So that bike sold for $15,600 4 years ago. You can see how sought after these are. They go for colossal amounts of money. If that's the case for Harley Davidson, then what's it like for the bike that spawned that? How cheap can I get one of these original Armstrong bikes? Of course, I'm going to be looking in the UK because they are British bikes, so surely that's the best opportunity for me to find one. And I'm pleasantly surprised to say that these aren't actually that rare. I was surprised at how easily I can find these. You won't have an issue with this at all. Take this, for example. 1987 Armstrong MT500. It's 5 miles away from me here. I could actually contact the person and ask to maybe do a video with them, because this is so close to me. Listed 5 months ago. Look at this compared to the Harley Davidson. The Harley Davidson is, it's like gold dust, and it's worth as much as gold. This, £1,500, listed 5 months ago. Pretty much the owner cannot sell it. He says here, the bike was used in the military in the 80s and 90s and has been stored in a shed ever since. I've got it running and seems a dream, but it could do with a complete service and cleanup and some tender loving care, ideal for someone that wants a minor project. The logbook will need applying for, as it's been misplaced, but any checks welcome. It looks pretty legit, despite not having a logbook, but look at the difference. They're basically the same bike. You just compare the value of the American one compared to the British one, I guess, because so many more British ones were built. I think if you're Canadian, there may have been around 500 to 1,000 bought for the Canadian Army. So you will be able to find somewhere a Canadian-built one as well. And if you're Jordanian or Canadian, they sold these bikes, Armstrong CCM, they sold them with electronic start. But interestingly enough, to the best of my knowledge, they didn't think the British Army deserved electronic starts. So this British bike didn't supply the British Army with electronic starts, but they did supply it with electric start for Canada and Jordan. Love little facts like that. Moving on, motorcycle residuals and buying new. This is from James. Freddie is a new rider with little prior experience. I entered this hobby from scratch and purchased a Zontis 125cc. So far, it's been a fantastic bike, both in terms of performance and value for money. I bought it brand new for £3,300, and over the past 5 months since buying it, I've ridden 800 miles. The first service has been completed, and the bike remains in mint condition. But just before taking my Mod 2, I decided to upgrade to a bigger bike, as I'm older and in a position to spend more. And out of curiosity, I asked the dealer of my new bike for a part exchange valuation on the Zontis. To my shock, they offered me £1,200. That is a staggering 60% depreciation in only 20 weeks. So instead of accepting this loss, I chose to sell the bike privately, where it achieved £2,200. This kind of drastic depreciation does no favours for the motorcycle market or for encouraging new riders to invest in bikes. Yeah, James, that's genuinely painful. I do have, and I get quite a lot of stories through, from owners who buy Chinese motorcycles saying they do struggle selling them, especially selling them back to motorcycle shops. It seems that a lot of motorcycle shops, or at least still a good chunk of them, they're still slightly wary of taking Chinese bikes in as Part X, for whatever reason that may be. Yeah, and a potential hit of of £2,000 in 20 weeks is too painful, but it shows that these bikes do sell on the private market. So put it onto Facebook Marketplace and it's probably about right, losing £1,100 in 20 weeks. You take VAT at 20% that immediately comes off. It's not a million miles off. So I would say that's perfectly fair enough at £2,200. James, welcome to biking, but it's a good point. You know, if you buy a brand new bike, you do almost need to just accept in your mind, you need to keep it for sometimes 3 years just to make sure you don't take too painful a hit with it. On now to Phil. Lightness required. Freddie, I currently own a Harley Davidson Fat Boy, which I haven't been able to ride since August 2024. I badly broke my left ankle, which needed surgery for pins and a plate to support the ankle and help it heal. I'm able to walk unaided now and itching to get back on two wheels. However, I'm struggling with the Harley and finding it very heavy to maneuver in and out of the garage. I'm considering buying a companion bike to get back riding, and I'm thinking of the Royal Enfield Meteor or Honda Rebel, as these are considerably lighter. I'm also concerned about seat height being 5'9" and need to be able to flat foot the bike as I don't have confidence in the ankle yet. I'm also comparing prices, so second hand is the likely option. Can you or your viewers suggest any other options? And I'd be interested from anyone who's been in a similar situation. I was watching a video yesterday from Geordie Pressman. He has just sold his Harley Diner for a Honda Rebel 1100. That's the YouTube channel there. Check it out because I found that very interesting. Harley Davidson to a Rebel. So a Rebel I know will be a good shout. And of course a Royal Enfield will, although you may be surprised sometimes at the weight of the Royal Enfield. So I've got a feeling the Rebel with its lower center of gravity will be much, much more appealing for you over a Royal Enfield. And I'll chuck one more in here, Phil. Something that you may not have considered yet, because you may have looked at the weight of this bike and thought, no, it's too heavy. I can't do that. It's not light enough for me to consider. But don't discount it, because the center of gravity is everything. And these are some of the easiest, most fun bikes to ride. You may find this a revelation. This starts from Tom over in New Zealand. Check out these pics, Phil. Freddie Meyer Triumph Bobber. I upgraded to some white wall tires and the response has been mixed. Some people love them, others not so much, but I'd be interested to hear your take and the take of the viewers. Tom, New Zealand. Tom, I had to share this. Perfect timing. For one, this is one of the coolest bikes on the road, the Bobber. And that combination you've got there with white wall tires, I am a colossal fan of these tires. And I think if there's a bike that can get away with it, it's going to be the likes of a Harley Davidson Softail Deluxe and also a Triumph Bobber. It looks so good. These are just excellent, excellent bikes. I cannot tell you how much I love these Bobbers. When I went to Tenerife and I got to try one of these from Tenerife on Triumph, I properly fell in love with this bike. And prices now are getting really appealing. And going back to Phil, I don't know what your budget is, but if you take a look at this, I'm showing you this one as it's my perfect spec with those mini 8 bars. You can get these for as cheap as £6,500 now. But what I think this may do, Phil, is not only fill the gap that has been left by you not being able to ride your Harley Davidson, you may find that actually it fills the gap from the Harley Davidson full stop. It has that style, that nostalgia, and the fact that it's so much easier to manage and maneuverable. You may end up just not even riding the Harley Davidson much. You may end up being a convert to the Bobber. See, this was listed 5 months ago, £7,500 down to sub £7,000. This is getting really appealing now. The seller states the bike is in new, mint condition, never seen the rain, finished in ironstone grey, maybe my favourite colour in this. Many custom parts, bobbed rear fender, based in Epsom, Surrey, lovely part of the country, 5,000 miles on the clock. Phil, I would highly recommend go to a Triumph dealership, for example, sit on one of those and see what you think. You may be pleasantly surprised with that. And Tom from New Zealand, thank you. Lovely looking bike. On now, same vein, Sportsters. Sportsters in the USA. the prices you can get really are a fairly new Sportster for. A 2016 883, I could not believe this. This is from Larry in Illinois, USA. Freddie, I picked up this on the 2nd of January, 2025. Or actually, you do it the other way around. The 1st of February, 2025. 5 hours from my home in central Illinois, USA. I paid $3,500 cash for this 2016 Harley 883 Sportster Super Low with just 2,700 miles on the odometer. I mean, this is incredible. $3,500 for just a 9-year-old Sportster with $3,500 on the clock. Perfect condition, no scratches, dings or dents. You can buy good used Harleys over here. They're all over the internet. It just takes patience and pounding the keys to find them. Larry, I really like the look of this. It's the colour combo as well, that white and almost turquoisey blue with all of that chrome. That's art. For me, those original air-cooled Sportsters, pure art. They're timeless machines. Now, carrying on from last week, the hyperbike, the Honda Blackbird, the 1100cc beast. Mike's got a little competition for that. Freddie, I just finished watching your show here over in the US, and you were talking about the Honda Blackbird versus the more famous Suzuki Hayabusa. Now, I left a comment mentioning Kawasaki's entry into the hyperbikes. That is the ZX-12R. I've sent along a couple of photos of the one I owned for many, many years. It was a 2001 model that was stock other than a set of Marquesini rims and Corbin side cases. Sadly, increasing age, both mine and the bike's, meant I finally decided to part with it a few years ago. It was a toss-up as to which was becoming more brittle, the bike's plastic body or my aching knees. And that's Mike. Okay, Mike, let's have a look at this. You piqued my interest. So we've got the Kawasaki ZX-12R. Again, this one is a bike that goes under the radar, just like the Blackbird. Made from 2000 to 2006. This is ridiculous. 178 horsepower. This came out 25 years ago, and it was making 178 horsepower a quarter of a century ago. It's a sports tourer. No, that's not fair. It's not a sports tourer. It's a hyper tourer. It's a rocket ship of a bike. What can we get? My initial thinking is this is going to be fairly good value, actually. Bear in mind, you can get Honda Blackbirds for $1,500. And the reason, of course, like a lot of you are telling me, why can you get these hyper bikes cheap? Well, because maintenance is often ridiculously expensive. You can pay £1,000 for valve clearances and some other bits. And when a bike sometimes is only worth $1,500, you know, you can see why the price has dropped to such a low point. But I'm quite fascinated to see that the Kawasaki ZX-12Rs don't drop anywhere near as low as the Blackbirds. It's so funny how prices work. This one, for example, listed 5 months ago, bear in mind, so these are not quick-selling motorbikes at all. It started at £4,500, now £3,500, 18,000 kilometres on the clock. I don't know if it's an imported one. No, 18,000 miles, there you go. 18,000 miles on the clock, two keys, MOT for another few months, raised bars, battery, not block capitals, not for the faint-hearted, open to reasonable offers. Look, you can probably get that for £3,000, I would say. And if you can get it down to £2,500, that would be quite an interesting proposition. But, you know, they're not cheap, those. But one of the original hyperbikes, just looking at that, you know, knowing the amount of power, that was in the glory years of the Japanese race for pace. Mike, thank you for sharing that with me. To bike of the week, from Paul. Freddie, you are wrong about the Buell last week. This is where I said, what was it I said? Oh, I said there was a Yamaha Bulldog V-twin engine, almost like a super naked bike. And I said, this is like a good version of a Buell, because Buell motorcycles are famous for owners not being able to find parts for them. So if it breaks, just basically you're stuck. You can't find any parts for them. Paul jumps in here. Freddie, you are wrong about the Buell. I have an XB12X Ulysses. And there are specialists like Twin Motorcycles in the Netherlands who support us Buell riders. And I have not even heard of anyone not able to find a part that they need. Yes, a number of parts are remanufactured rather than the originals, but they work and they're of a high quality. Toast TV then carries on and joins in. Just Dobbs talking, beep. Great, so thank you for that. I have, honestly, I promise you, I've heard from Buell owners who say that trying to get parts for them is a total nightmare. And I know of Buell owners, I do, I promise you, who are looking to sell their Buells because they just can't get the parts for them. However, because of Toast TV's very eloquent opinion, let's do one of these Buells as Bike of the Week, because I promise I like them. I was considering one of these before I got my old Triumph Speed Triple. I'm a big fan, and it's good to hear that the potential issues of getting parts actually isn't an issue at all, so long as you know the right places to look, and I've always been intrigued by these bikes. Let's take a look at it. XB12X Ulysses, made from 2008 onwards. The interesting bit to that comes in a second. It's got 103 very proud American horses. It's a 1200cc air-cooled Sportster engine. For me, first of all, that's really, really cool. It's an adventure touring motorcycle. But here's the problem. This bike was launched in 2008. Those of you with a good knowledge of Buell will immediately be thinking, hold on, that doesn't give a very long lifespan, because in October 2009, Harley-Davidson, the owners of Buell, they announced that they were stopping all production of Buell motorcycles. In essence, that's it. Buell was over. That means that the Buell XB12X Ulysses only had a production run of 1 to 2 years, and that means that this is potentially going to be a very difficult bike to try and get hold of. But I'm pleased to say, now where did I put this? It is possible to find them. Yes, they are really rare, but I think I found three in the UK. Got it. Motorbikesforall.com, British site, so yes, this is based in the UK, so you can find these, you can. It's funny with these, you can see there that Sportster V-twin engine, the 1200. This is not a pretty bike specifically, but there is something about it, and a bike doesn't have to be pretty to be appealing. I would quite like one of these. I wouldn't like it because it's a pretty bike, because I don't think it is, but I would like it because I find it significantly interesting enough. I like the story behind it, and Buell, with their range of bikes, they tried something different, and I like that about it. Interestingly, this is for sale for £5,800. I think Buell prices are actually quite strong. Certainly they're stronger than the comparative Triumph Speed Triples of their day. If you look at a similar age, Buell Super Naked compared to the Triumph Speed Triple, you're looking maybe at about 50% more that you'd have to pay for the Buell. However, when I bought my Triumph, they were absolutely neck and neck level price-wise. So they've got a definite following. But this one comes with all of the Buell luggage, the back box and the panniers. And look, it's a quirky thing, isn't it? You know, they're rare, and it's a conversation starter. And I like them. Bike of the Week, Buell Ulysses, for sale in the UK. You can find one of them. So thank you so much, everyone, for watching this week's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. Have a brilliant week. I'll see you in the next one.